Hello, welcome to the Gratuitous Pausing Podcast. I am your host, Alex Greyhawk, and joining me is my co-host,
Jackson Eflin.
We're two film nerds who like to talk movies and stuff, and figured we'd toss it up on the internet, see who was interested in listening to us blab on for about half an hour.
The reason our name exists is that whenever we watch movies, we will pause them to discuss them endlessly. It's been called gratuitous, and I won't disagree with that. It can take us up to 2 hours to watch one episode of the latest whatever on Netflix.
It's true. So, this is our first episode of the podcast, and we'll be going over our Disney bracket, which we decided to do when the one online was making rounds, and we both agreed it was awful.
I'm not sure if I'd say awful. I think it was just badly organized, but you had a bee in your bonnet about it, and it led to all this nonsense. So I'll agree to the awfulness for the sake of this podcast existing.
Fair enough. So our first episode will be discussing Snow White, the 1937 first animated feature,
versus
Bolt from 2008, about a talking, well, not really talking dog. I mean, the dog talks, but not to humans.
I mean, I think the qualifications for being a talking dog are that you're a dog who talks. So Bolt is a movie about a talking dog.
All right. So we should probably talk about how we're going to be discussing these films.
Yeah. So we decided on two categories. We've got artistry and watchability as kind of our two poles. For artistry, we wanted to talk about how it's made, the visuals, but also the storytelling and the characters and the writing, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And for watchability, we're more concerned with things like how good the songs are to sing along to, how some of the characters aged in regards to political correctness, and just how enjoyable the movie is to watch. This is more of a was this fun category.
This week we're watching Snow White and Bolt. The reason these came up is that Snow White, adjusted for inflation, has made the most movies of any of the Disney animated canon, whereas Bolt has made the 32nd most.
Roughly, there's some issues with some of the math there, but if you really want to get into that, well, there's a post on Facebook from Wednesday that you can take a look at for that. But yeah, the reason Snow White is rated number one is kind of because it cheated. It was released over like almost a dozen times in between its original 1937 release and the most recent theatrical release in 1993. So it had a number of shots to gross box office, whereas most of the movies on this list only had one.
Also, we're adjusting for inflation from a movie released, you know, before the Hindenburg was inflated. So, grading on a curve a lot there.
And as to why Bolt is rated 32nd, it's actually a really decent movie. It probably shouldn't be scored as low as it is. It unfortunately has some things going against it, though. So Bolt was released in November of 2008, the same weekend that the first Twilight movie released. As you can tell, it did not do well in comparison to that.
We also had the problem that it was a superhero movie, more or less, being released before the superhero boom. This is, you know, about the same year as Iron Man, and we didn't know that Iron Man was going to be a thing. It was just, oh, that was all right. So the world wasn't really ready for it.
Yeah. The Dark Knight had also come out earlier that year, and we were definitely more in the swing of dark and gritty superhero movies as opposed to what we've been getting with the MCU now in recent years.
Right. Bolt is very Silver Age.
Yes.
I'd also argue that it's possible that Disney didn't know how to market it, because it's kind of a hard thing to summarize in, you know, 140 characters.
That's very true. Like, even if you look at the theatrical poster that is posted up on our Facebook and Twitter, the poster does not do a very good job of explaining what this movie is all about.
Which we didn't do. We should probably summarize the movies. Summarizing Snow White, not super hard. I assume you know about it. Stepmother wants to kill this really pretty lady. Really pretty lady runs into the woods, hangs out with some short guys. Stepmother dies. Kiss, happily ever after. Castle in the sky!
Whereas you have Bolt, which opens up and it seems like it's gonna just be this girl and her dog story. And then all of a sudden the dog has superpowers in the next scene. Eventually you find out that the dog is an actor along with the girl on a like sci-fi spy television show. You also find out that the director is making sure that the dog is method acting. So Bolt is entirely under the assumption that he actually has these superpowers. A couple of things happen, and Bolt is accidentally shipped to New York from Hollywood. Afterwards, he is attempting to find his owner, Penny, and rescue her from the Green-Eyed Man, the villain from the television show. And is eventually drags along a stray alley cat to help him get back to California, which is literally on the other side of the country. Eventually, he finds out he does not have superpowers, kind of goes through identity crisis, culminating with eventually finding his owner, saving her from a fire on the set, thus actually becoming a hero, and then both of them quitting the show and retiring to a life in the country.
Well, Snow White is based on a very well-known Grimm's fairy tale, and he was pretty close to it. It doesn't take a lot of narrative risks apart from putting in lovely animation and songs. Bolt is very original. Is it based on anything? Did we find out about that?
No, Bolt is not actually based off of anything. It was a slightly different project, going under the name American Dog when it was first pitched, but John Lasseter came onto the film from Pixar and changed things around a little bit, and we ended up with what we got with Bolt.
I think American Dog is actually a pretty good name for it. There's a very American-ness to this movie, because you've got New York, a Midwestern trailer park, Hollywood.
Vegas,
yeah. You have these very quintessentially American locations that Bolt visits as kind of his hero's journey thing, all viewed through the eyes of animals. So you have alley cats and pigeons in New York and a hamster in the trailer park, etc.
Well, it sounds like we should probably start diving into these movies on a more critical level. Why don't we go ahead and start off with Snow White?
Okay. So on an artistry level, I thought Snow White is great because you have these amazing colors. It's kind of the first time that an animated movie has been this long, this big landmark thing. The sequences are great, especially the scene where the witch is making herself ugly. The drama and gravitas of that spell is fun. But where it works kind of on a presentation level, the story is less strong. Snow White is not much of a character. She kind of reacts to things. And while it makes more sense, since she's originally a kid in the book and was supposed to be about 14 in the movie, when I was watching it, she looks like she's about 25. And
yeah, I've definitely got to agree with the, like, unsure of age thing. I think part of that has to do with, like, it's not even a same face syndrome problem that Disney kind of sometimes has. It's more of just a blank face. Like, there's not really a whole lot of character design that goes into Snow White, especially if you look at in comparison to the forest animals, the queen in disguise as the peddler, and the dwarves themselves. A lot more character is given away just via looks there than Snow White or the prince, or even the Evil Queen, although the Evil Queen is definitely a tier above the protagonists, quote-unquote.
That said, the Evil Queen definitely has more of her character coming in through her clothes and the way they billow around her and the environment that she's in, more than necessarily her face, which occasionally gets very animated, but because of how wrapped up it is with her cowl or whatever, it's harder to get those expressions out. So in a way, kind of the animation that I'm praising has that one stumbling block, but it's kind of a big stumbling block that feeds into the problem that the story is less strong.
Yeah. A lot of times it feels paced much more like a stage play than a film. And to be fair, at the time, film was a much newer medium, and they were kind of still learning things as they went. It's also really apparent that they took a lot of ideas and tone and even costume design from Romeo and Juliet that came out in 1936, just a year before this. If you take a look at the opening sequence with Snow White and the prince singing the duet where she is at the well, it's very striking how Romeo and Juliet-esque that scene is.
A stage play is a good metaphor. You could also see it as kind of a string of different wacky Looney Tunes shorts. Because you've got, for instance, a bunch of animals clean a house. A bunch of dwarves sneak around their own house. Afraid of a monster who's just a princess. Ah, reveal. That kind of thing. Which was definitely what Disney was making at the time. That was what animation was at the time. And while watching a bunch of Looney Tunes shorts is fun, the way they're strung together has pacing troubles.
How do you feel about watchability?
During the parts where I could just sort of zone out and look at the art, it was nice. And some of the songs are decent. And there's some decent gags, like the bit where the dwarves are coming home and they're slowly creeping into the house because they're afraid of the monster who's crept in. That is really fun. But some of the songs are just kind of nothing happening. And some of the character interactions have not aged well. Like Grumpy being uncomfortable and sexist, it could work in a more nuanced way, but I don't think it works here.
No, definitely not in the age of the red pill.
Yeah. I feel like we talked a lot about Grumpy being an incel.
Yeah, that definitely came up during our watch through.
And honestly, Disney doing a incel redemption arc movie is weirdly on brand, but there wasn't quite enough of that gone into. For Grumpy, it sort of happened and didn't really get explored. Like, why is he so grumpy? What happened to him?
Let's see. The opening of the film is just a storybook with text that's not even narrated, which for a company like Disney, who is producing family-friendly content and usually aimed at pretty young viewers, it's weird that they expect them to read. I mean, it is 1937. More adults are heading to theaters than children these days, I guess. But it just seemed a little odd that even in the remaster, they wouldn't have added a narration.
It could be that they were intending to recreate the experience of a parent reading to their kids at home, which, fair enough, but also you can already do that without paying money for that. Or they might have wanted the parents to read to their kids, you know, leaning over in the seat, but also encouraging people to talk in the theater is deeply, deeply immoral, and Disney should be flogged.
There's also the fact that because of that, the first word that's actually spoken on screen is slave, as in slave in the magic mirror, which is a little uncomfortable. Probably not the first word you want associated with your Disney film.
Mm-hmm. And while we're getting into issues that impact race and history, we should probably talk about the thing with Dopey, just sort of doing a very caricatured Chinese person imitation for a few seconds with a symbol. That was weird. I'm not sure why that was there.
I mean, casual racism. I mean, you see the same things in Looney Tunes coming from out of that era. It's not uncommon, and yeah, I think it does hurt watchability a little bit in this day and age, but I think it's better than them taking it out. I give Warner Brothers a lot of credit for that little disclaimer that they toss in front of Looney Tunes shorts nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Slightly less missable is the Evil Queen's design, which definitely could be seen as a caricature.
Yeah, there's definitely some sort of like Yiddish, maybe Romani influences there.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about Romani and not great representation when we get to Hunchback in a couple episodes.
Maybe.
I do want to give credit, though. There is one line that made me laugh my ass off. So throughout the film, Doc has a bit of a stutter, and he kind of jumbles letters around in words. And when they first get to the cottage and see that someone's broken in here and cleaned everything, they're like, well, search around for them, check all the nooks and crannies. But he keeps fumbling over the words, and at one point he almost says Crooked Fanny, and I love that in 1937, Disney was going with this cartoon character almost cursed joke. But I think what I find more funny is that they felt the need to have him cut off Fanny. Oh, that's so wholesome and adorable, and I had to laugh.
I really do love Doc. I like that him stuttering isn't demeaned or doesn't take away from his ability as a leader and as someone who has some intelligence to him. As someone who has a bit of a stutter and speech impediment stuff, more so as a kid, that, you know, gives me warm fuzzies.
I don't know. Is there anything else that we want to touch on? I think we kind of hit most of our major points.
Yeah, I think it's probably all for Snow White as a film. I think overall, while it is relatively important as a landmark of film history, animation history, Disney history, all that jazz, I think that it is more interesting as a historical document than as a thing you sit around and watch. But it's also not unwatchable, especially if you have kids who will be entertained by colors and sounds.
Eh, I would disagree. I think there's a lot better options. It definitely feels like a lot of the scenes go on too long, and in this day and age with how our attention spans are, I'm not sure if kids would be willing to sit through some of that. I will, however, agree with the notion of it as a historical artifact. I think it's really important as the first feature-length animated film. But in general, I think this is one of the Disney films that could benefit a lot from a live-action treatment a la Cinderella or The Jungle Book.
So, on to Bolt, which I had not seen before. So this was a new experience for me. Yay. We talked about this earlier, that it's kind of weird that it didn't do better, but here we are now.
Yeah, it's one of Disney's early attempts at 3D animation outside of Pixar. It's also interesting in the fact that it's John Lasseter's first film that he saw throughout the entire, he had creative direction over the entirety of. There had been a few other films that he came in towards the tail end of, but this was the first one he was there for start to finish. While this film came out 10 years ago, the animation honestly doesn't really look that bad. It's actually held up surprisingly well. There's some plasticiness in the human faces, but because we're focused much more on the animal characters and don't interact with them on screen all that much, it's not a huge issue. I really think they did a really great job of having the focus be on these animal characters, so they didn't have to worry about the fakeness of that human skin.
While I agree with that, the plasticiness is diminished a bit by them being mostly caricatures. Their design is exaggerated. You don't worry so much about them not looking realistic because you can tell right from looking at them that they're supposed to be these ideas as opposed to direct representations of human forms. Some of the stuff with the animals is actually really impressive. Like, their fur holds up well, and fur is hard to animate, even still. I honed in on this. I don't know why. The pigeons have this, like, iridescence to their neck feathers. It was beautiful, and they had, like, each one had a different color, so it's really easy to tell them apart. That was a good design choice. While the animation overall holds up pretty well, I'll admit that how the camera exists in this animated world isn't as amazing. Like, it looks fine. There aren't necessarily a lot of, like, standout scenes or like amazing blockings or great uses of light or shape that really stood out to me, apart from maybe a few wide shots and that kind of thing, which isn't awful, but it's definitely a thing that, you know, we've seen improved over time.
Mm-hmm. There is like the second scene of the, well, not really a scene, but it's kind of like an extended portion of the movie towards the beginning where they are filming a television episode, but you don't know that till the very end of that scene. They get a lot of mileage out of just the spectacle of everything going on with the Michael Bay-esque explosions and these chase scenes and some of the panning and framing. It's really interesting. I kind of wish more of the film had that, but after that action sequence, it kind of just falls to the wayside.
And while the spectacle and Michael Bayness of that is fun, there's also kind of a green filter over it that definitely makes it feel like a TV show, but at the same time, it doesn't make it all that pretty. And so it hurt the visual satisfaction of it a little bit there, here and there.
What about like story and plot? How were you feeling about that?
That was great to me. I like these characters. I like Bolt, who is the most paladin. I like Mittens, the cat that he meets, who's a great counterpoint to that, but also I like that because they're tied together for like most of the second act, there's a lot of good slapstick there and a lot of a haughty character being humiliated, which is a lot of fun, especially since Bolt isn't necessarily actively trying to humiliate her, and the expressions that get out of the cat's face are great with that. Penny, pretty solid character. The dog's owner is about what a child actor would be like. Definitely has that like youth and wants something more out of life, but isn't necessarily sure how to achieve it. It helps that she's played by Hannah Montana / Miley Cyrus, who was in fact a Disney child actor.
Honestly, speaking about that, this movie has a lot to say about Hollywood and the way it treats child actors, auteur directors, and its opinion on method acting. It definitely has some criticisms to throw around, which is refreshing for a Disney movie, although it does seem a little weird and hypocritical that it's Disney making a criticism of child actors. But honestly, one of the biggest antagonists throughout the film is probably Penny's agent, who keeps pushing her to do things that will help her career to the detriment of her mental and social health. And it's really refreshing that at the finale of the film, he finally gets told, "No, we quit."
It's also worth noting that 1 year after this film came out, Miley Cyrus would kind of break out into her own. That's when Party in the USA came out, and then we got other increasingly rebellious songs of arguable wisdom. I'll admit, some characters were less satisfying to me, like the pigeons. I love the pigeons. I would watch, you know, 5 seasons of the movie about the pigeons. But the hamster, who's this huge fanboy of Bolt, he needed to be either less wacky and a little more grounded, or more wacky. Like a really weird Minnesota accent or something. He's kind of a bit too much, and I think that he either needed to shoot the moon or be dialed back a bit. That said, I have a notable distaste for the wacky sidekick. Like, you're going to hear me rant about Olaf in a few weeks, and I'm sorry about that.
I honestly have to agree, and typically the wacky sidekick doesn't get to me as much, but there's just something about Rhino that doesn't quite work. He definitely comes off from an audience perspective as this dweeb, but the only other character that shares that opinion is Mittens. And at the point in the movie where Rhino is introduced, you're not really supposed to like Mittens. So it just kind of feels weird. Like, who am I supposed to agree with from an audience perspective? He also, as the story gets on, just kind of gets a little annoying, and I'm a little glad that towards the third act, he kind of doesn't really have that big of a part.
Rhino's whole thing is that he watches Bolt, the TV show, and definitely buys into the idea that Bolt does actually have these various powers and is actually this big epic hero. That does have a relatively good emotional resolution where he talks about how actors like Bolt give ordinary people this sense of wonder and excitement and heroism that they can live vicariously, which is actually a pretty cool idea and a pretty nuanced perspective on the role of superheroes in film, which wound up being really timely. But that emotional resolution comes about between the second and third act, and then Rhino continues to be about as dweebish and annoying as he has been. He doesn't seem to have grown and learned from this experience as much as he might have.
Yeah, a lot of times it's, I'm not sure whether you're trying to have Rhino be portrayed as comedic or heroic. Not that you can't necessarily be both, but typically in this situation it's one, and then in another situation it's the other.
And as Rhino is essentially the audience stand-in for people who watch superhero movies, what the movie's saying about those people is slightly unclear and could be a little uncomfortable depending on how you read it. I say this as someone who watches a lot of superhero movies and TV shows, so grain of salt.
Is there anything else we need to discuss here for artistry? I think we pretty much covered everything.
Yeah, we've kind of gotten into watchability a little bit too with what does and doesn't work, but we can get into that more.
Yeah.
The songs are, you know, you can't sing along to them very well. I don't remember any of the songs.
There's really only two notable songs in the film. One is middle of the second act montage as they are traveling across the country. I believe that song is also sung by Miley Cyrus. I couldn't tell you the title or almost any of the words. And then the other song comes at the end of the film and is kind of another montage song. Yeah. But beyond those two, there are no other songs with lyrics in the entire movie.
And while I don't mind that too much, not all movies need to be musicals, I would actually love to see an alternate universe where this movie was a relatively standard Disney musical with, you know, 5 to 7 songs, and how that would have been different. I think that might have been a really interesting way to take it, and would have maybe heightened the fantasy, especially if only the animals sang and none of the humans did.
As someone who's not always there for Disney films' musical aspects, I was totally okay with the amount of music we got here. While the songs weren't necessarily memorable, they definitely worked for the scenes that they were used in.
Oh, 100%. Good montage music.
Yeah. I think the only thing I would have liked more from the music is if we would have gotten, like, the Bolt television show theme song at some point. I think that would have been fun.
Mm-hmm. As a quick weird sidebar, and I could not bring this up, the kind of Bolt title card we get that I presume is what they use for the TV show is weirdly similar to the title card for The Flash. Like, the difference is that the lightning bolt is vertical and not horizontal. It still has that same, like, rattle of motion and kind of the same, like, crackling whoosh of sound and a yellow lightning bolt going on. It was uncanny. You know, the characters in the story are very compelling, and it kind of has a relatively easy to follow arc that flows really well, that kind of thing. I'm drawn in a lot by the characters, especially Mittens. We know I love a good villain, and Mittens starts off with a protection racket. When we eventually find out, spoilers, you're still here? Good. When we eventually find out that the claws she's been threatening the pigeons with this entire movie were not there, that she was declawed by her owners and then abandoned on the streets, and that's the reason she's so damaged emotionally, that reveal comes towards the end of the movie, and it hits really hard. Like, I was surprised by how much emotion they got out of this character, who's been fairly reprehensible and kind of deserves some of the slaps that she was getting over time.
Yeah, it's actually really impressive how good the pet politics are in this film. They go into the cat declawing and abandoning pets and whatnot. And the fact that all three major animal characters get a loving home at the end of the film really pulls at your heartstrings.
Another scene that really worked for me was, again, a Mittens scene when she's sort of teaching Bolt how to be a dog. That's one of the montages we get, and it's really fun. Just watching this dog who has been a superhero for his entire life, or so he thinks, learning how to throw sticks and stick his head out a moving car window and let his tongue hang out are great. There's
another thing I really loved is the pigeons that you meet in New York. I'm not sure if it was entirely intentional, but for those of you who watched a lot of Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain and whatnot, and remember some of the skits with the Good Feathers, it really feels like a direct homage to them, and that was really fun to see.
By the same token, the two pigeons that we meet when they get to Hollywood, who are catty film agents trying to make their big break, are really funny and feel relatable as someone who follows the book world and has seen a lot of people who are kind of always hoping for that big opportunity and would be super excited if they met Chris Evans walking down the road with his cat looking for a small girl. Bad metaphor, I take it back.
All right. I think we've pretty much covered anything. Is there anything else?
Oh, I'm going to ding the watchability for Bolt just a little bit in that we see the title of one of the episodes, and it's just Get That Dog. Like, there's a wide range of Bolt puns and Penny puns and dog puns you could have had, and just Get That Dog? Come on, be bolder with that.
Honestly, that's a fair criticism.
Yeah. It was good, but I feel like it was a little safe. I would have liked to see it being a little bit more risky. Although I think if it was too much more risky, it would be veering closer to DreamWorks and less to Disney. So I can get where that would come from.
I definitely agree with you on the safe point. It definitely feels like this film was focus tested to appeal to middle America. Not quite to its detriment, but I definitely feel you where you feel the film is just kind of playing it safe, not taking many risks. But to be fair, some of the risks that Disney had taken with their other 3D animated pictures did not work out terribly well.
Dog thinks he's a superhero, finds out he's not, but has to become one to get home to his loving owner. It's already kind of a risk. So I get that, like, to Disney, that would already be a fairly big premise to tackle, and that going too much further might be kind of alienating.
Well, I think that concludes our analysis. Now, I guess it's time for the big moment. What moves on in the bracket?
While Snow White is a good film, I'm definitely going to give this one to Bolt. I think it has more merit as a film, even if its place in history is a little bit less important.
I'm going to have to agree with Jackson on this one. Bolt is much more interesting to watch, and while nothing will ever have the historical significance of Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, it is over 80 years old at this point. Film trends have changed, and it doesn't really hold up all that well. Not saying it's a bad film, but it's definitely a product of its time. So I'm also going to have to give this one to Bolt. So, with Bolt moving on, next week we have Pocahontas and Moana. And I assure you, I did not rig the bracket. That's just where they got seated. Thank you all for tuning in, and we will hopefully catch you all next time on the Gratuitous Pausing podcast.